This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
$1 trillion or 14 million jobs. How best to grade the debt limit plans? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Good to have you with us. It's Wednesday, the 27th of July today, and here's where we are debt-wise. And that's Marketplace for this Wednesday. Today the Dow... All right. No. Things did actually happen today. Not any progress in discussions that we know of, but a formal evaluation of the two debt reduction plans that are on the table at the moment. The Congressional Budget Office has now looked over, scored is the inside the beltway term, the Boehner and Reid proposals. The CBO is the official decider of how much money, how many hundreds of billions of dollars each of them would save. Perhaps not surprisingly, the CBO says both plans will save way less than advertised, on the order of hundreds of billions of dollars. But one does wonder, with 14-some-odd million Americans still out of work, whether a different grading system ought not be used. From Washington, Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Economists told me it is possible to estimate how budget cuts could affect unemployment. They've got all sorts of models to test this sort of thing. But at this point, they don't have a whole lot to go on. Harry Holzer teaches public policy at Georgetown.
A lot would depend on the timing of the spending cuts and also how they're distributed.
And that's up in the air. We know the Republican plan would cut things like student loan programs and Medicare spending, and the Democrats say we'll save billions when troops leave Iraq and Afghanistan. But the really big cuts, well, they'd come from a bipartisan commission later. And Holzer's not optimistic about the two plans.
I don't expect either one to better the employment situation in any. The question is, how much damage will they do?
He says government jobs are at risk and maybe programs millions of Americans rely on, like food stamps and unemployment insurance. Heather Boucher is a senior economist at the Center for American Progress. She said if she were scoring these plans according to how they'd affect employment, she'd worry about what big spending cuts would do to consumer demand and the economy.
In the short term, cutting spending is not going to improve the job situation here in the United States.
Boucher said, think of the economy like a family with a mom who's lost her job.
They know that they're not going to be able to get out of debt. They're not going to be able to deal with the fact that their home may be in foreclosure or any of the other things that they have to deal with until that breadwinner gets back to work.
And that's what concerns her and Harry Holzer and other economists I talked to. They think we're doing this all wrong. Both the Reid plan and the Boehner plan could help the government pay down some bills, but they're not going to do anything to help mom land a new job. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
If the Treasury Department does start missing debt payments come Tuesday, it's not just the government that's going to feel it. I mean, nobody knows exactly how this whole thing's going to play out, seeing as how it's never really happened before. But you can bet the private sector is more than a little uptight, too. There are comparisons already being made to the financial crisis, with credit markets grinding to a halt. And we all know how that turned out. So companies both large and small are trying to figure out how much to worry and what they can do about it anyway. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich has that story.
More than a dozen companies declined to comment for this story. After all, why remind their shareholders what next week might have in store? If the government defaults, the interest rate on U.S. Treasury bonds is bound to rise, lifting other interest rates with it. Long story short,
this causes a disruption in the access to credit and also a huge amount of uncertainty for corporations.
Jim Cates is president of the Association for Financial Professionals. He represents the people who balance the books at some of America's largest companies. And last week, he took their pulse on the federal debt ceiling debate.
50% of our people that responded to the survey said, yeah, we're not worried, but the other 50% said they were. And that's a pretty significant number. And some of the things that they would do in that instance were draconian.
Companies concerned they won't be able to borrow come Tuesday are saving cash now. That means postponing investments in new equipment and certainly not hiring. But just because companies are planning for the worst does not mean they're expecting it. At the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, Government Affairs Director Linda Woggins says most members are keeping the faith.
Well, I think everyone understands that it's a serious issue, but it's one that we've faced many times in our country, and I think ultimately there will be a way that legislative leaders and the president can come together and find a way to deal with it.
Yes, but how? Business leaders say it's not just getting past Tuesday. Any short-term fix just prolongs uncertainty, giving them little incentive to loosen up with the cash. I'm Jeff Horwich for Marketplace.
So it looks like stock traders picked today to start getting wigged out about the debt. Over on the foreign exchanges, the dollar got back some of what it lost yesterday. And bond traders, boy, they were cool as cucumbers, man. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Given that this is all still in the land of hypotheticals, the sequence of events next Tuesday could go a little something like this. We miss payments on our debt, S&P and the other ratings agencies downgrade us, and the world ends. I exaggerate by not by much. That's the conventional wisdom out there. Even the White House is saying it's more worried about a downgrade than anything else. But commentator Robert Reich says ratings agencies, heal thyselves.
It's perfectly appropriate for a credit rating agency to warn that America's credit rating will be downgraded if the nation defaults on its debts next week. But Standard & Poor's has gone a step further. It says even if the debt ceiling is raised next week, it might still lower the nation's credit rating, unless the deal also contains a credible bipartisan plan to reduce the long-term budget deficit by $4 trillion. This is something neither Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid's nor House Speaker John Boehner's plans would accomplish. Now, I don't mean to be impertinent, but as long as America pays its debts on time, who is Standard & Poor's to tell America how much debt it has to shed and by when? Until the eve of Wall Street's collapse in late 2007, S&P gave AAA ratings to what turned out to be some of the street's riskiest packages of mortgage-backed securities. Had S&P and the other major credit rating agencies done their job, we wouldn't have had the debt and housing bubbles to begin with. That means taxpayers wouldn't have had to bail out Wall Street. We probably wouldn't have had a Great Recession. Millions of Americans wouldn't be jobless and collecting unemployment benefits. There'd be no need for the stimulus that saved 3 million other jobs. And far more tax revenue would have been pouring into the Treasury. In other words, had S&P done its job, the federal budget deficit would likely be far smaller than it is today. And S&P wouldn't be threatening the United States with a downgrade if we didn't come up with a plan for shrinking it. And why has S&P decided to get into public policy now anyway? Where was it when President George W. Bush turned a $5 trillion budget surplus bequeathed to him by Bill Clinton into a gaping deficit? Here's some free advice to Standard & Poor's. Stick to what you know.
Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor for the aforementioned Bill Clinton. His most recent book is called Aftershock, The Next Economy and America's Future. Our future? Well, you can never really know, right? But David Frum's going to be here next week. Until then, send us your comments, marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. We'll be right back. It's Wednesday, so what the heck?
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter.
Yeah, so there's the debt crisis stories we've been doing all week. I should say, first of all, not many of you cared for that. But moving on, I talked to Bill Gross on Monday, Uber bond investor down at PIMCO, about why the markets haven't really been responding yet to the debt dilemma. Bill said, among other things, that the U.S. AAA credit rating is already as good as gone, in part because of the big problems this country already has. That includes, he said, and he got a bit wonky here, a present value of future liabilities that comes to $60 trillion. Economist Alain Thierry lives in Silver Spring, Maryland, and he got wonky right back.
Not everybody understands what present discounted value is. When you talk about this present discounted value, you need to know what is the stream of payment over what period of time and the discount rate used. Otherwise, you can come up with any figure that you want.
Stephen Beard had a story yesterday on the impact of Britain's foreign aid, and he mentioned this fact. Over the past three decades, Stephen said, Africa received 16 times more aid per head than China did, and yet the African economy shrank while China took off. This being the letter segment where listeners take issue with our math, Josh Miner of La Crosse, Wisconsin, wrote to say this.
Talk about comparing apples to oranges. A continent made up of dozens of countries, most ravaged by a long history of slavery, colonialism, and world wars, compared with a country which until recently had been unified and not ruled by a foreign power.
That's one point of view. We know there are a whole bunch more out there. Share them if you got them. Go to marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. Coming up, things are going to get a bit steamy in here.
It's not considered a very sexy topic.
But first, let's do the numbers. Another down day on Wall Street, the fourth losing session in a row, and today is the day for the Wawa trombones. The Dow Industrials dropped 198 points, 1.5%, finished at 12,302. The Nasdaq plunged 75 points, that is 2.6%, ended at 2764. The S&P 500 lost 27 points, 2%. Closed at 1304. Cisco Systems and Caterpillar dumped 3.6% apiece. General Electric unplugged 2.6%. Boeing lifted 0.2% on higher revenue forecast. Delta Airlines down 5% after missing analyst projections. Dunkin' Brands Group, that is also known as Dunkin' Donuts, climbed 46% today on its first day of trading as a new IPO. Starbucks drained 3%. Panera Bread cut away nearly 10% today after reporting less than tasty earnings. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.98%. Still really, really low given what's going on. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. What does Tier 1 Capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
On the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. The National Association of Realtors releases its pending home sales index for June. A Senate subcommittee on aviation operations addresses fuel prices and alternative energy sources. Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate and House recycling caucuses hold a joint briefing on sustaining the U.S. recycling economy. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM, American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. If, and for now it's still an if, the worst comes to pass on Tuesday, or whenever the latest date for the government running out of money happens to be, the after effects are going to linger for a while. And maybe that's part of what's going on in the wider discussions we're having about this whole thing. Fear of the economic unknown. To try to get some idea of what those unknowns might be and what might happen, we've called Matthew Slaughter. He's Associate Dean at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Matt, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Kai. It's good to be here.
This is a conversation that's going to be kind of big picture because nuts and bolts, frankly, they're changing and we don't know from day to day what's going to happen. But the question to start with, it seems to me, is what has already happened? Have we done damage to our economic reputation?
I think we have. It's important to have perspective here, which is for decades, U.S. Treasury securities have been the one asset in the world that investors around the globe have considered to be free of default risk. We earned that because of our ability to make good on our principal and interest payments over many decades. But that special status in global capital markets, that's not some law of physics. It may be the case that we end up making a set of policy choices, and we've already started down that road, that gets investors at some point to decide Treasury securities are not the world's risk-free asset. And how exactly that plays out is unknowable and quite literally could be catastrophic.
Okay. So far, you and a lot of other people, including myself on this radio program, have talked in hypotheticals. It will be bad. It could be bad. Terrible things may be coming our way. What if those who have been saying, you know what, that August 2nd deadline, it's not such a big deal, and we'll see how things go. Could it be that this is the financial world's Y2K?
It could be. August 2nd may come and go. We may miss a couple of, let's call them, small interest payments in the scheme of world financial markets, and there might not be a calamity. But even if we avoid defaulting, or even if there's a default that's, let's call it, small and technical, that doesn't precipitate a financial crisis, our country still faces the threat of having one or more of these very important rating agencies downgrade their ranking of the safety of U.S. securities. And the impact of that on the health of the U.S. economy will last far longer than beyond August 2nd.
Is this one of those things, if you roll it in with the financial crisis and our role in that, is it one of the things that leads to the end of empire, if you will?
Hindsight's always 20/20, but what has befallen many countries and before them empires of different forms historically is when their economies don't grow quickly enough to support their military and other broader government goals, and in particular when those governments then end up issuing unsustainable amounts of debt. What credit rating agencies and more generally what international creditors are looking for the United States is whether we can today craft and then implement a credible plan to reduce the size of future U.S. fiscal deficits. This is really a fundamental point in American economic history where if we can't have leaders that step up and articulate the trade-offs and create a story and a narrative for how we can address these fiscal problems, the problems will be resolved more on the timetable of international creditors.
Let me ask you exactly that question, because you have worked in the White House, you've been on the Council of Economic Advisors, you've done professional time on an economic staff in Washington. I have to believe that learned people are jumping up and down on the desks of politicians on both sides of the aisle saying, what in heaven's name are you people doing?
I hope there is that kind of jumping going on. My concern is that's necessary but not sufficient to get the policymakers to change the trajectory for America's fiscal policy. One of the things that's important to keep in mind about Washington, there's only a limited amount of time and energy that policymakers will allocate to economic issues. The challenge is these fiscal issues are really important, but boy, they need to line up trade agreements, immigration reform, treatment of international investment, our crumbling infrastructure. There's a bunch of really important economic and kind of socioeconomic challenges that we need folks in Washington, D.C. to be addressing.
Matt Slaughter at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Here's some good labor news for once in a good long while. So far this year, American companies have created more than 10,000 jobs in one single city, Juarez, Mexico. Juarez is, because of drug violence, they're widely considered one of the most dangerous places on the planet. But Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports the body count hasn't really stopped American companies.
Business is down for Mexican retailers in Juarez as criminal gangs extort protection money from shop owners. But other industries have been spared.
The organized crime element has not directly targeted legitimate manufacturing and distribution industries.
Bob Cook is president of the El Paso Regional Economic Development Corporation, which recruits new businesses to El Paso and Juarez just across the border.
We've created more than 10,000 new jobs in the city of Juarez since the beginning of this year and almost 30,000 in the last 2 years.
Why Juarez? Location, 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 says Tom Fullerton, an economics professor at the University of Texas at El Paso.
The attractive feature of investing in Mexico is proximity and the presence of a fairly highly trained, export-oriented manufacturing labor force.
Some companies are spending more on security, but not all.
We have not increased cost at all.
Alan Russell is president of the Tecma Group, which helps U.S. companies manufacture goods in Mexico.
We don't have a single weapon on any Tecma property. It's not an environment where we're having to guard the gates and guard the people inside the building.
Russell says business has never been better.
We will have a record year in 2011.
Some workers on the U.S. side will benefit as well. Analysts estimate that for every 10 jobs created in Juarez, one new job is created in El Paso. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
It takes a lot to muster sympathy for cable companies, but the internet does seem to have them at something of a disadvantage because more and more of us are 86ing our cable subscriptions and watching shows for free online. Big television networks aren't wild about that phenomenon either, so Fox is doing something about it. Next month, it's going to introduce a first-of-its-kind paywall for viewers who want to see, say, Glee or Family Guy online right away. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
Until now, networks like Fox and internet sites like Hulu have been posting shows online for free the day after they air. But that's starting to get cable and satellite companies freaked out. Why pay Dish Network or Comcast if you can just download Glee or The Simpsons without paying? Under Fox's new deal, viewers have to have a paid subscription to Dish or Hulu to watch online the next day, or they can wait 8 days for the free version. Stacey Kramer is the editor of paid content.
By the time you can watch a new episode of Glee, the episode after that will have already aired, which for some people is a bummer.
Enough of a bummer, the cable companies hope, that viewers will plop down $70 or $100 a month to subscribe.
They want to say, look, there is value in having this subscription and paying this amount of money every month.
Dish is the only provider to sign up so far, but Vince Vittori at the Yankee Group predicts other networks and pay TV companies are likely to make similar deals, and not just so they can keep the customers they already have from cutting the cord. They've got future customers to think about.
People that are under the age of 25 are almost referred to as cord nevers. They're going to get out of school and never begin to pay for pay TV services because they have found so many alternative means for getting access to all of the content they want without actually paying.
That's a plot line that scares media companies as much as any horror flick. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
At the risk of telling you something you might already know, the renewable energy mantra usually goes a little something like this. You guys, we gotta invest in green technologies, stuff like solar and wind and biofuels, or we're just gonna keep on being dependent on fossil fuels. It's entirely possible, though, that we're looking in the wrong direction, that there's a clean energy source with huge potential that isn't all pie in the sky. And best of all, it's already here, right under city streets. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Yves Tro reports.
At Seattle's Pike Place Market, Beecher's Handmade Cheese lures customers by making its fromage right in front of them. Tourists press their faces to the glass as cheesemaker Adam Smith stirs a vat of curds and whey.
And it's doing what's called its cook. We heat it 10, 12 degrees over a period of 35 minutes, and then we hold it at that temperature for 40 minutes.
The vat's encased in a steel jacket. The lining leaves space for hot water. To get the water to the exact right temperature, Smith turns a valve that lets in steam. The steam comes through pipes run by a local company called Seattle Steam.
We've been doing this for 120 years.
Stan Gent runs Seattle Steam. He shows me the old brick plant. One wall's painted with a mural of killer whales. Inside, workers prep the furnace for a giant fire that'll boil water. They burn recycled wood. Gent says it's greener and cheaper than fossil fuel.
The wood's coming from the city itself, broken pallets and packaging. When the electric utility cuts the trees to keep them off the power lines, it'll eventually end up with us.
When the company started in the 1800s, it made two things, steam and electricity. The electricity ran the downtown streetcar. Making the power for that created extra heat. The heat got converted to steam and sold to buildings. When the streetcar went away, the company dropped electricity and stuck to steam. But from the late 1800s to the 1930s, most urban power plants sold both.
I got steam heat. I got steam.
And some city plants, like New York's, still do. But lots of cities grew cold to the idea of power plants downtown.
They were originally coal. It wasn't very clean.
Tom Kasten founded Recycled Energy Development. It's a thermal energy company in Chicago.
It had ashes, dust on the street, and people wanted them out of their neighborhood.
So, Kasten says, we moved power plants further from cities and lost steam in the process. You can't send steam more than a few miles, so power plants just let that extra heat float into the air.
We throw away an amount of heat from making electricity that is sufficient to heat almost all of the buildings in the United States.
Kasten says power plants today are much cleaner. He wants to put them back in city centers, build more pipes, and use all that wasted heat. Energy analyst Sam Jaffe says that idea's had a hard time getting attention.
It's not considered a very sexy topic.
But Jaffe says it does have one sexy selling point.
Efficiency is the lowest hanging fruit.
As energy prices rise, buildings and factories want to cut their energy bills. Jaffe says if they can use steam, they'll use less electricity or gas.
It's the easiest way to reduce greenhouse gases and also maybe the cheapest way of getting more power for less dollars.
So as business looks around for better ways to use energy, he says the hiss of a steam pipe could get more attention. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by FreshBooks, an online invoicing service designed to help business owners save time, manage their books, and make invoicing easy. More at FreshBooks.com. By Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And by Putnam Investments, focused on finding opportunities one stock at a time. On the web at putnam.com/largecapequity. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, just because we haven't been spending enough time on the debt debacle, right? Got this from Tyler Cowen's blog, Marginal Revolution, today, talking about the AAA credit rating that American debt has. And we do have a lot of it. The U.S. Department of Treasury issues 59% of all as in worldwide, all the AAA sovereign debt that's out there, debt issued by countries. Nobody else is even close. Germany is next at 10%, France at 9%, the U.K. at 8%. So one obvious conclusion then, if that AAA goes away come Tuesday, it's a big fat global economy problem. And on that depressing note, which I think makes two depressing final notes this week, that's Marketplace from APM American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 198 points, about 1.5%. The NASDAQ tumbled 75 points, 2.6%. The S&P 500 gave up 27 points, 2% there. Bahan Baladuni, Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Bradford Craig, Jeff Peters, and Charlton Thorpe engineered the program for us. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time back here, how's that old saying go? Teach a man to fish?
If the wild stocks came back to their fullest capacity, they still wouldn't be able to feed the world. So I think this is the way of the future.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow. This is APM, American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.